Welcome to Bali Ocean Secrets, the podcast where me and my other half, Matt, speak to the spearfishers, business people, expats and locals of Bali and tell the story of our journey there. Matt's feeling a little bit shy, so I'm going to host this podcast, but he was very involved in interviewing and speaking and finding the local Balinese people that we spoke to. And he has a real passion for spearfishing and free diving, and that really comes through in this podcast. So over the last few years, Bali has become a little bit of an obsession for me. It is undoubtedly a magical place. And Mary, who owns an ethical jewellery business called Gardens of the Sun, gave us a really succinct intro to the island.
They have this saying that if you're in Bali, if you surf, you live in Uluwatu. If you're a hippie, you live in Ubud. If you're a hipster, you live in Canggu. If you have kids or are retired, you live in Sanur. And if, you know, you just want to drink beer all day, you go stay in Kuta. And if you just want to shop and spend all your money, you go to Seminya.
So here we are with episode one. And this one's all about a major love of Matt's, as I said, and a new love of mine, spearfishing. Spearfishing is one of Matt's major passions in life. And one of the major things he wanted to do while we were in Bali was experience some spearfishing and to show me a little bit of the spearfishing and freediving life out in the ocean. And we met some incredible people in the spearfishing world. It opened my eyes to life underwater and genuinely tapped into something that I think was already there, but has unleashed this love of the ocean in me. We took trips out spearfishing and freediving all over the island, and we really learned about the importance of this world to some of the locals. Michael, who runs Big Tooth Spearfishing, was one of the first spearfishers we came across.
My name is Michael. I'm doing spearfishing and freediving in Bali. I'm living near the ocean before with the family. That time, I often go into the sea and playing at the beach. And then there is a friend who doing a spearfishing and I following him. Now I'm doing a business. It's called Big Tooth Spearfishing in Bali. And also because there is a more and more people interested in doing a freediving in around the world. So I was thinking, why not to doing spearfishing? So my spot is mostly like it's a little bit far from the city things. It's more in nature and showing that how the local people living.
We took a day out with him off the south coast of Bali, and it was a genuinely crazy day and a crazy introduction to spearfishing, finishing up with a local style fish barbecue and the hottest sambal sauce I have ever tasted. The waves that day were huge. Some of the locals were telling us that they wouldn't go out in the water, that we shouldn't go out in the water, but we were pretty convinced that we wanted to get out there and give it a go. We'd already waited a few days being on the island, settling in, getting on the right time zone before we got out onto the ocean. But the waves were huge. And at one stage, the engine of the boat broke and I ended up floating away with the captain whilst Matt and Michael, the free diver, were out in the water. When I did get in the water, as I say, the waves were very, very big and really threw us about, but we did see some pretty amazing fish despite the visibility, and we ate them for dinner, which was incredible. So Michael explains a little bit about this.
Today we're doing a spearfishing, but the condition now is difficult time to doing spearfishing because even in Bali, it's a kite season is always started at June. So when you go back from here, you will see a lot of people who are doing a kite. It means the wind is very strong and also good for surfing. So most of the people, like local people, my friend, they stopped doing spearfishing this month. So yeah, I heard that there is a problem today, like the boat and the propeller is took off. You with the captain is... going very far from us. And then I heard that you're crying, actually. Today, we not get that much because the water is so rough. But at least we get like a rainbow runner. It's one of the delicious fish, even for sashimi. A white snapper and the wrestle. This wrestle is a family of the Napoleon fishes. So we're doing a barbecue, right? For the lunch the fresh fish. I hope you like it.
Yep, it was quite the first spearfishing experience for me. We also met Andre after hearing about him from tons of different spearfishers around the island. This guy is famous in the Bali spearfishing world. And we kicked off by asking him to tell us a little bit about him.
I'm originally from Bali. I born here, diving since when I was junior high school, when I was like 12. My uncle like spearfishing. Yeah, by that time, I still kid, so I just follow him and then it looked interesting for me. So when I finished high school, I learned my English in Australia for 1 year. And when I'm back, diving every day. Yeah, spearfishing everywhere around Bali 4 or 5 times a week.
Wow.
Yeah, by that time, I still young, no married, single.
So it was a real passion for Andre that turned into a business. And he told us about his spear gun business too.
I started commercially in year 2000. But before that, I just make spear gun for myself. My family have furniture business. I know wood. Yeah, mostly my gun is from thick woods.
You've gone from making chairs as a family to now making guns. How did that happen? Where did that come from? Was that you? Were you the one to say, right, we have a furniture business, let's move into spear guns? Where was the opportunity?
I make because I like spearfishing so much by that time. And then I say, okay, we have wood because we make furniture. So I try to make one for me. 25 years ago, we cannot get anything in Bali, nothing.
Andre clearly has a passion for spearfishing and for making guns. And we've got no doubt we'll see them around the world very, very soon. They're certainly well known on the Island of the Gods. He also told us about the best places to spearfish in Bali and the best times of year to be there.
Worst month is December, January, March.
Worst or best?
Yeah, worst.
Worst month.
Because
okay.
The weather. We have rain, raining, and no good visibility. So during those months, we not go. But from July, August, windy again. The best month is from September, October, November. Yeah, and depending on the current also. So in Bali, mostly everywhere we diving, there is current. No current, no fish. November is the best time. Flat condition, clear water. If too much swell, wave, so we don't have comfortable. So, yeah. And also the current can be very strong in Nusa Penida. Can be like 5-6 knots.
And Michael backed this up. He told us a little more about the best times of year to be spearfishing in Bali.
Two time is the best time to doing a spearfishing in Bali, which means it's from August to September. It's the best time because the wind is gone. Also, the fish started coming to the shore, like the big game fish, like rumpon, fish aggregating device. It's a house, fish house in the middle of the sea. The mahi will coming. So every FID, at least you will see like a 10, minimum 5 mahi there, and very easy to shoot and delicious. And then the second, it's from January to February, starting the season of the wahoo and Spanish mackerel.
And Andre told us about his favorite day spearfishing.
Yeah, when I shot my first marlin in Nusa Penida, yeah, it was so adrenaline. Yeah, we diving, and then I saw like 65 kilo marlin, and then I just dive 1 meter. Yeah, because the marlin on the surface, almost kill shot. I just use small gun, three rubber bands gun. Yeah, small, nothing huge. So I don't expect to see marlin unconscious, but slowly they're still fighting, but not really fight. So I want to take second shots on the fish. So I couldn't breathe. Too exciting. I couldn't go down to take a second shot, even though only 5 meters away.
Okay, yeah.
So I said, oh, I cannot. I asked my friend, take a second shot. I'm too nervous. I just, you know, that moment, yeah, I can't. Yeah, I always remember.
Michael told us a little bit about his craziest day out on the waves too.
You know, we have we go into the group with my friend in the very deep ocean, and then I said I just want to check. You guys wait here. I just want to check if there is a fish or not. I don't need to use a float, safety float. I took off from my gun because it's most of the time I never see a fish there. And then when I go down, I see a golden trevally, a lot, like a 15. And then it was a 2 kilo, so I can fight it. So I go dive. And then when I about to shoot that golden, it suddenly the giant trevally showing from nowhere. And then I forgot that I didn't put my float safety rope in my gun. And then I shoot that fish. So the fish was so strong to pull me down to the bottom. So I fight like 3 minutes in the water. I'm almost black out that time. So I'm lucky that the fish was stopped fighting. So I can go up very quickly. Normally, 2 minutes is maximum, but this time was 3 minutes. It's like all my oxygen is going out. Yeah. After that, I promise to myself that I will never do that again.
Wow, that was a seriously near miss for Michael from Big Tooth Spearfishing. After blacking out, Andy had another crazy story for us.
When I go spearfishing, I saw from the top there is a lobster on the bottom. 4 or 5 lobster. So I know that it's difficult to shoot the lobster because it was small. So I took off the gun, I put in the float, and I was thinking to catch with the hand. And then I go dive like a 10 meter, and suddenly, it's from nowhere. The shark is coming to my like front of me, and then I was surprised. And the shark also didn't know that I was there. It was a surprise. It's because we don't see each other that time. When I going to catch that, so the shark is coming from behind the rock. And then we both surprised and we both running. I'm going back and then the shark is going that way. You know, it's actually, that's why shark is in Bali. It's not never happened. Like I never heard the story that shark attack a human in Bali.
We also met Gus, a spearfisher based out of Kuta, who is now captain of the Bali Ocean Secrets boat. He told us a bit about his background.
I'm born at the beach. My hobby is fishing with the rod. Try to spearfish, kill fish, sell. I'm showing you spearfishing, make some money for survive. Before just hobby, but now job, 5 years. Every day, never die off. I just shoot enough, maybe 12 kilo or 20 kilo is enough. I'm going to the tall bridge, showing the bull shark. Oh man, big. But no choice. Make some bit money for my family. Like die or die, something different, always different experience.
Gus also shared about his average day.
Yeah, I get up on the boat and say hello with the kids. 6 o'clock in the morning. Pick up my stuff, my gear. Spearfishing, bang, 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 bang. Normally, I'm spearfishing just 4 hours, getting fish. After that, I'm selling. At the local harbor, the community there.
Okay.
The people there.
You know them, they know you.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm going to restaurant for selling. I'm selling mahi-mahi for restaurant.
Yeah.
Nice. And then wahoo or Spanish mackerels.
And Gus told us about the best spots for spearfishing in Bali as well.
Amat also good for the coral, close at airport, the track. You can find many, many fish, parrot fish, and then giant trevally. Sometimes, you know, the dugong, mermaid.
And not just on Bali, but off Bali as well.
Sometimes I'm going trip camping in the jungle. 4 nights, 3 days. I'm killing the fish. At Java, have the name Alas Purwo. They conservation for the panther or tiger there. Yeah, you're looking the bull, you're looking the bird. One dive, you can see 6 or 7 turtle there.
Gus told us what he's learned about spearfishing in his time.
Equalize, not make your air hard. Same like yoga, the spearfishing, you know. Must be hard, no, like tip. Must be tip, slow down. Because underwater, life so slow, absolutely. Oh, you look the coral and then many fish coming after you dive and in the down, going down. And then 10 seconds, fish coming.
And Andre gave us his top tips for spearfishing too.
Practice and practice the experience, because the tip is you have to be relaxed and don't push yourself, because it's only fish. Sometimes win, sometimes no win. But sometimes people just push too much and situation different, can be big problem. We have bad situation also a couple times. So that is the sad things. We lost some friends already. Every time I take people out, I say, be calm, relax, enjoy the day. It's only fishing. I know you come here for a long way and pay money and everything, and then you expect like the best. But it's fishing. Today we not catch, but tomorrow maybe good day. But just enjoy, be relaxed. Don't push yourself, because I don't know their limit, but sometimes they want to, they're so exciting to see fish and then too deep for them. And then, yeah, problem. Yeah. So, yeah, for shooting, yeah, when you calm and relax, you can shoot easily. And then the fish can feel the vibes when you relax. They will come closer. And then your heartbeat slower, everything, you move slow motion. So, yeah.
A really poignant thought from Andre there about making sure you relax and don't push yourself beyond your limits. And we also spoke to a British guy called Sam, who's been a spearfisher and freedive instructor in Bali for a very long time.
I was born in Gateshead and I lived there until I was around 27. And then I ended up doing traveling and ending up in Bali. And then I worked there for a freediving school for a while and maybe 2 years. And then I made my own freediving business. And then that's been going for like 5 years now. And that's when I realized that the thing that I'd tried to do when I was a kid, which was swim to the bottom of rivers or lakes or whatever, and not being able to do because of the pressure in my head, and never understood how, you know, you watch a James Bond movie and you see these guys swimming all around in the water with spear guns and you wonder how they're getting down past the first few meters. Because when I was a kid, I didn't understand about how to equalize the pressure. I had the equalization key, which was the thing that had been missing when I was a kid, when I tried to swim down into water. And then I had this day where I just realized that I could go like 10 meters underwater and swim around and see all the stuff I saw when I was scuba diving. But I just did it holding my breath. And I kind of was much more excited about the way that I moved, like the speed and the technique and the freedom, obviously cliche freedom, but like, it's the inner child really just playing and having fun and moving any way that I want. Whereas with the scuba diving stuff, it did feel a little bit restricted or slow. And then as soon as I started freediving, as soon as I did the first course, like I knew that I was going to be doing this for a long time and I knew it was going to be a big part of my life.
He gave us a few tips for getting started with spearfishing and freediving.
It's a very unique activity, freediving. It's unlike anything else. I'm not putting down other activities, but generally most activities involve like muscle coordination, a bit of strength, a bit of agility, that kind of thing. And freediving does too, but then there's this like unique physiological thing that happens in the body called the mammalian dive reflex or response, where the body physiology transforms and adapts to the act of freediving, the act of holding your breath and swimming around underwater. And then it allows you to do that for longer and deeper and more comfortably. And this is the same kind of thing that whales and dolphins, who are, of course, the best free divers, that's what they do. They have a reflex that allows them to stay underwater for longer, like changes in their physiology, like the heart rate slowing down and circulation changing and the spleen producing more oxygenated red blood cells. It's always better if people have some level of comfort in the water. It's just going to be a smoother process for them if they've already just like, you know, been in the water. And a lot of people, though, they don't do swimming lessons when they're younger. So the water can be just a very scary idea. scary place.
And Sam told us what he teaches on his courses.
The basic skills would be like learning how to equalize the pressure, which is the thing I kind of discovered through scuba diving, how to equalize the pressure so that as you swim down, as the pressure in the water increases, you're equalizing that by putting more air into your inner ears. That's a technique in itself that you have to learn. This relaxation, you know, being relaxed in the water and learning to move in an efficient way so that you're minimizing how much energy you use, because you can waste a lot of energy on the surface just flapping around trying to swim down underwater. And if you don't get a good efficient duck dive technique, then you are going to waste a lot of energy there. And a good duck dive is being able to get down a few meters underwater with using almost no energy at all. If you do it in the right way, you can just position yourself and use your natural weight to pull you under the surface and then time everything perfectly so that you're not losing any energy anywhere.
Sam also gave us some of the science behind what's happening to our bodies when we're free diving and equalizing.
So as an airspace is going down underwater, the air inside it is shrinking. That's why if you take a balloon, take it underwater, the balloon will get smaller and smaller as you go deeper. And that's what happens to your lungs, because your lungs are flexible. So as you go down into the water, they get smaller as the air inside gets compressed and the pressure outside is increasing. Your lungs are fine, you know, you don't have to do anything with them. They're flexible, they get crushed, they go smaller. However, the spaces in your ears and your sinuses and your mask, these areas are not flexible or have a limited flexibility, which means they're not just going to shrink like a balloon or a lung will as you go down. So therefore, as the air inside those spaces is shrinking, we need to add more air to compensate for that shrinking air. So we do that by pinching our nose and pumping air from the lungs and then holding the air in the mouth and moving that into the nasal passage, the sinus area, the nasal cavity, moving from the oral cavity into the nasal cavity, which is then connected to the Eustachian tubes and the sinuses. So then once you've put the air in there, you kind of pushing it by creating some pressure in your mouth, and then that moves the extra air into the spaces. And then that stops those air spaces from kind of collapsing in a way. Like as you go down underwater, if you don't equalize your ears, you'll feel pain in the ears. And what's happening there is the ears are trying to go smaller. The ears, the space in the ear or the space in the sinuses want to go smaller, but they can't because they're fixed and you're kind of, you know, you don't want them to change. They're not designed to change shape. So you feel the pain of that. So to stop that pain happening, you put more air into those spaces to compensate for the shrinking air caused by the increasing pressure.
Sam also told us some of the hidden gems he's found in Indonesia.
Pulawai, which was the most northern part of Indonesia, off Aceh, the island of Aceh. There's a small island called Pulawai. And I went spearfishing there with some of the locals, and that was really great fishing. It was easier than Bali. I think the further, more remote you are, the fish are going to recognize a spear fisherman.
But he gave us a similar warning to Andre.
So I'm going to just lay it on the line here that I did it wrong, and you shouldn't go free diving alone. So I went out alone with a real gun and no float, and I was just looking for fish. And you shouldn't do that. You should always have a buddy. I wasn't really an instructor at the time and wasn't as safety conscious as I should be. And I was spearfishing and saw this giant trevally and didn't really know how big it was, and I'd never seen one of these fish before as well. It just looked like the right fish to shoot. I shot it, and it just was a really hard fight. It just took the whole line out of the gun, and then I was on the surface trying to keep a hold of the gun, and the giant trevally was pulling, swimming right down. It had taken like, I don't know how many meters of reel. The whole reel from the gun had gone. I had no float, which was a stupid decision. Should have had a float so that I could just let go of the gun, and the float would have held on. So I was in this situation where I'm trying to keep my head above the water. I'm holding onto the gun. I don't want to let go of it, but the fish is actually strong enough that it's pulling me down. But I'm on the I managed to get to the surface by letting the reel out. That's the benefit of a reel gun, that you can let the reel out as you go to the surface. So I did that, got to the surface, but then the whole reel was gone, and then the fish was pulling me down. So I had the knife out, and I was like, right, am I going to cut this line? Instead of losing the whole gun, I'll just lose the spear shaft and the line. So I had the knife ready to cut the line so I could stay above water. But then I managed to just kind of keep the fight going a bit longer and stay with my head above water. And then the fish got tired before I did. And then I managed to reel the fish in. And it was like 35, 40 kilos or something, which is huge. Like, definitely never a good idea to go freediving alone, and everyone will tell you that. A lot of people do it because they haven't done courses or they're not educated to really understand the dangers. And usually those are the statistics that add to the deaths in freediving. You always hear it's a spear fisherman again. It's never a freediver with a buddy doing the right thing. It's always someone went spearfishing on their own and then they blacked out unexpectedly and they drowned. And so you really don't want to do that, especially with spearfishing. I mean, spearfishing is more likely something's going to go wrong. There's lines that can get tangled if you don't have the right gear. Or there's also that kind of aspect of not wanting to let go of the gun or not wanting to come up until the fish gets close enough. So there is a tendency sometimes to push longer because the fish is just out of range. And if you just wait a little bit longer, it's going to come into range. That's the aspect that's kind of dangerous as well, that desire to wait a bit longer to get in range of the fish. And the way that you want to do spearfishing is you want to go out with two of you and do one up, one down. So one person's underwater trying to get a fish while one person's on the surface waiting for the other guy to come up. And when the person that's underwater comes up, make eye contact on the surface and the safety buddy checks that the guy that's just done the dive is okay. Because most of the time, if people are going to black out, they'll do it on the surface. They don't do it underwater. It can happen and it has happened underwater, but most of the time it's when someone surfaces, they already too far or they do the wrong kind of breathing and then they black out on the surface. So that's why we want to always check people on the surface. I know someone that died in Nusa Penida because they weren't following safety protocols, as far as I can tell. But I have dealt with students who've lost consciousness, not spearfishing actually, but on a freediving course. I have had students come up and start their recovery breathing and then it's not going very well. And you can see that, you know, they're a little bit not quite here, and then you just support them. So then all the situations I've dealt with has been someone surfaces, they're starting to have a loss of motor control, also known as a samba, which is the kind of precursor to a full blackout where you lose control of your motor reflexes a little bit. And in that situation, you get disorientated. So the danger is that you're going to inhale or swallow some water or put your face in the water. What I would do in those situations, what I have done, is put my hand under someone's armpit, take off their mask because they might be trying to breathe through their nose, and then just slap them and tell them their name. Breathe, tell them to breathe and use their name. It actually makes a big difference as well, using someone's name and telling them what to do. Not just saying, wake up, bro. That doesn't mean anything to someone that's half unconscious. You've got to tell them to breathe and use their name. Gently slap them on the cheek. It's funny watching couples on courses because they love the opportunity to start slapping each other on the face when we do the simulations.
And our experiences meeting spearfishers around Bali got a thought sparked in Matt's mind. He could not shake it from his head that he wanted to invest in a spearfishing business. He's always wanted his own boat, so he started thinking about how he could make that happen whilst we were there. And ultimately, we bought the Bali Ocean Secrets boat. And if you want to get in touch with Gus, the captain, and he can take you out on a spearfishing trip or a sunset cruise, all you need to do is go to Bali Ocean Secrets on Instagram. Keep listening for episode 2 of the Bali Ocean Secrets podcast, where we'll be talking to some incredible business owners that we met around the island and finding out how and why they started their businesses. Make sure you follow and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. And huge thanks to all of our guests this time, Mary, Michael, Andre, Gus, and Sam. Bali Ocean Secrets is produced by Pineapple Audio Productions.